11 o'clock hour here on Cody and Gold on 96.5 The Fan. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. We'll get to the trash of the day here in about 20 minutes or so. Also a reminder later on today, 1 o'clock hour, it's the Fan Club on a Friday. We've got our friend Andrew over at Rieger. Can't wait to see what he's whipping up for us today. Also, one of our listeners that took part in the Cody and Gold garage sale all the way back in, I guess it would have been June. He bid on the Fan Club experience at the time, the Club 610, but now Fan Club experience. And
same difference.
Listener Jacob going to be in studio as well in the 1 o'clock hour. So we'll have some fun talking Chiefs, talking Royals baseball. But let's talk some more Chiefs for the time being with our Chiefs contributor here at 96.5 The Fan, the editor over at Chiefs on SI.com. He is Josh Briscoe. He joins us every Friday at 11 o'clock. All right, what do you make of where we're at with this offense? I think that's the number one conversation this week, is either Travis Kelce specific or what Cody and I were discussing, which is, once again, hey, man, they're not really throwing the ball deep down the field.
I mean, it's a little bit of both of those things. And I think in part with Kelce, it's who he is. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little bit of myself back. We're doing a little bit of a upgrade in audio quality today, and I love the sound of my own voice.
Drew, if you could check on the mix minus there.
I'll power through, and you guys can tinker with buttons there, as the Chiefs should be tinkering with a few things in the offense. They should be pushing the ball downfield a little bit more. Thank you. Sounds great now. And Kelce should get more involved as a part of the plan. This was something we were going through yesterday on Only Weird Games, and Nate Taylor and Seth Kaiser having this conversation. And I'm sure Nate has brought you through this. You saw his piece over on The Athletic, taking a closer look at what's going on with Kelce. Last year, so much of the offense went through Travis Kelce. It was not just that he was the first option in like a theoretical sense, but that literally it was, all right, your first read is Travis Kelce. And if he's open or he's about to be, you get the ball there. Cause otherwise you're relying on MVS, Kadarius Toney, other guys, Sky Moore, guys who haven't earned your trust. And then in last year, Rashee Rice didn't earn that trust until the midseason point, maybe a little bit later. This version of the offense, it is legitimately spread out in terms of where Mahomes wants to go with the ball, where Reed and Nagy want him to go with the ball, which a more well-rounded offense is definitely a good thing as a whole. It just gives you these moments of dips in production for Kelce, and I think almost no manufactured touches for Xavier Worthy while he is still earning his trust as a real receiver in this offense. So I think these are growing pains that largely make sense. I still think we're feeling the loss of Hollywood Brown on this offense, yeah, because it was supposed to look very, very different during the offseason. So as time has gone on, as we've gone through these first three games, I see where some of the pain points are. None of them are terribly shocking. None of them are terribly worrying long term. But it makes for some less fun Sundays to this point.
It's so tough, Josh, to freak out too much when we saw last year all the struggles, man. And then ultimately, come postseason time, the offensive line play improved. They played almost flawless football, not turning the ball over. We all know they win the Super Bowl. So Cody and I said before the start of the season, like, any growing pains they have, definitely not sweating them this year, though, after what we experienced. Like, it's going to be hard for someone to tell me, man, they just can't fix this, Josh, and they're just not going to be able to win the Super Bowl.
Right, and there's a real security that comes with that, right? When you don't actually have to be panicking on the day-to-day or living and dying on the results, and it's what ends up making that Falcons game in the big picture not particularly worrying. It's what I think could make a strange game against the Chargers end up not being a big deal. If you win the game in the immediate and you believe your team's on the right track, then the rest of the details don't really matter that much. They don't carry that much weight. They matter to some extent. You want to see how the team looks on both sides of the ball. You want to see the promising building blocks. But we've seen that, and we saw it at times throughout parts of last season. So in this instance, you want to see growth. If it looks the exact same in week 9 as it did in week 3, we should talk about that. If it looks the exact same in early January as it does in late September, that's concerning. But to your point, You have seen the Chiefs execute this game plan, not even just last year, but so many times in the Mahomes-Reed combo, where there is an improvement, there is a settling in. You do start getting the air quotes real plays somewhere on later in the year. Maybe you get a little more aggressive Andy Reid later in the year. It doesn't mean that they shouldn't be trying to accomplish the most they can in the immediate, but you're right. You've seen this team have success, and we're not saying this from the Bengals perspective. Sorry, Drew, that was not intended.
It should be. Take shots. It's fine.
If you're 0-3, and you're having this conversation, it's a little bit of the loser's lament of you got some moral victories and you've got some things to build on. If you're 3-0 and you're at the top of the AFC, your only real competition for the one seed right now is most likely the Bills. Keep beating teams you're better than, and then you can figure out the details as the season unfolds.
Do you think that the refs like the Chiefs better, I guess? Because that seems to be the national talking point, at least from fans. Do you actually believe that to be true?
It is going to ruin my enjoyment of football faster than anything else to this point.
I have Al Michaels based on last night.
Oh, God. I tell you what, I've never identified with Al Michaels more. Last night was a perfect example of the truth of the matter here. The refs don't love the Chiefs. The refs don't hate the Chiefs. The refs don't anything, any team in terms of the big picture of what they all are. Being an NFL referee is really, really hard. In the general picture, they're not very good at actually putting the rules where they should be and being able to manage a game, be able to call penalties that matter. It's all a Rorschach test. It's all ink blots. You can look at referees be terrible, and you can try to divine some meaning from that. But you're always going to find whatever it is that you're looking for, because there's so much chaos from the group that you do not want impacting the game that it always feels like they are infiltrating on the sport by existing. And they kind of are when they can't just implement the rules, go ahead and punish the things that need to be punished, and move on. I do not need taunting. I do not need these fringe penalties. Sometimes they get called and sometimes they don't, because they're fringe penalties. That's the definition. Sometimes the Chiefs benefit from it. Frequently they don't. It's just how it works. And the NFL, frankly, is years overdue for an overhaul to try to make life a little bit easier on these refs, because you've got a bunch of middle-aged dudes out there running around with the best athletes in the world trying to tell you if that hand hooked a face mask or not. It's really difficult, but they have not had the overhaul that they've deserved at this point.
We're talking to Joshua Briscoe. He's our Chiefs contributor here at 96.5 The Fan. He's the editor over at ChiefsOnSI.com. We're going to talk about Mike Dana a little bit later on this hour. I'm curious to get your perspective. We notice, the pass rush rate is down a little bit. He hasn't been as effective early on. Then we find out he's not practicing yesterday. So we think he's just been hurt the first couple weeks of the season. Is that what is leading to his lack of production? Because he was great last year.
Yeah, I think it's also a little bit of what the job is and him kind of finding his level a little bit. He's a really good player. He's a very, very useful player. But whenever he's your third defensive end when Charles Omenihu's on the field, he looks like a great player because he's your part-time third rotational guy. You can have him and Omenihu, and Karloftis barely ever comes off the field even when there is depth, but you can try to keep those guys fresh while Chris Jones moves around and hunts his matchups and everything. I think it was a thigh earlier in the last couple of weeks for Dana.
Yeah,
and then now you get the calf.
Like that,
quad,
yeah.
That's right. You go quad and now you're at a calf. Maybe those are related, maybe they're unrelated. I think we underestimate the impact of injuries on every player in the league all the time, because they get out there on Sundays, they look pretty good, and we don't really talk about it. In this instance, I would say if there's any long-term concern, this is the game to go ahead and just sit Dana down. Maybe you get a few more answers about Felix. You're going to have, it seems like, almost certainly two backup tackles for the Chargers anyway. So I'm willing to see if Dana comes back looking like a different player or maybe a little more rejuvenated. It's also just a lot of work for him. And again, it's putting him in a role where I think the Chiefs are asking him to do a little more than he is great at right now. I think you could say something similar for George Karloftis, frankly. And that's a little bit of the mix of why that group is underwhelmed so far this year.
Would you, if you were the Chargers, put Justin Herbert out there?
No, God.
Like, both missing tackles, the Chiefs are at least a decent pass rushing team. There are so many games left. If it were me, I wouldn't be anywhere near it.
No, you can't send Justin Herbert out there with a peg leg and two backup tackles and say, hey, bud, stay away from Chris Jones. Ready, break. Like that.
That's what got him hurt last week. It didn't work.
No, and there's no reason to do that if he's going to go out there and look, hand the ball off a million times and let J.K. Dobbins carry the offense. That's fine. Taylor Heinicke can do that too. And I know, obviously, like, your quarterback impacts your running game and all of that. Here's where I'm at on the Chargers. Big picture, I'm kind of buying the Harbs-Herbs combo. The Harbaugh-Herbert duo is one of the most interesting head coach quarterback duos in the league. I think that makes sense. But when you look at the teams the Chargers have beaten, for anyone who may not remember, the two wins the Chargers had to start this year were against the Panthers and the team the Panthers beat. That that's not exactly the BCS resume that you need for bowl consideration late in the year. The Steelers loss, we don't really know what Pittsburgh is at this point. All of that to say, for me, I'm kind of selling on the short-term Chargers, and I'm buying the long-term Chargers. And in this case, man, even if it's going to take weeks for Herbert to fully get healthy, they have a bye after this week, too. They don't play the Broncos until the 13th of October. You can give Herbert 2 weeks off here. Understand that you are running out a very banged-up version of yourself in L.A. against the Chiefs on Sunday. Stick around. The game's going to be weird. It's going to be close regardless. But I just don't think there's any reason to push Herbert in this situation when you do have, like, what you feel like is the most important piece of your team is currently set. He's been banged up throughout his career. Give the dude a break and don't let him make him go out there behind a couple backups at this point.
We were talking about Kareem Hunt a little bit and what we expect, knowing this is his first game in a while, not just in Kansas City, but he had the hernia injury that needed, I think, surgery this past offseason. Does he just take all of Samaje Perine's carries? How do you see this playing out?
I think he'll take some of Perine's carries. I could see him taking a couple of steals as well. I think you have to imagine at this point, Steele gets the start again. It's not like he did anything to lose the job last week. He just wasn't like a huge impact player. By and large, at this point, if you have three running backs who are good, not great, but none of them stink, that's what you need for a competent offense. And I think the Chiefs feel like they are in a better position now with Hunt as opposed to just having Keontae Ingram be there in case of emergency last week. So Ingram didn't play any offensive snaps. He got a handful of special team snaps. I think we will see Kareem Hunt get offensive work. I would bet that he will have the third most snaps of the running backs in this game, though. Try to get him back up to speed a little bit. Put the ball in his hands a couple of times, maybe try to hit him with a target and see how he and Mahomes mesh in a real game for the first time in a very long time together. So I think we will see some Kareem Hunt. I think we will see the most of Carson Steele. And the Chiefs have kind of used him a little bit strangely to this point, but I still think Perine, even with Hunt being here, I think Perine's the best third down back on this team still.
Last question for me, Briscoe. You had mentioned Nate Taylor's article up at The Athletic not that long ago. What did you get him for his birthday? It is his birthday today. You going to sing to him? Are you going to get him a gift? What's your plan for your co-host?
I don't know if you saw what happened late in our show yesterday, but I think for Nate's birthday, I'm going to get him an apology and a new pair of shorts.
For those who want, go check out Only Weird Games. You'll get a chance to figure out the mystery behind the new shorts. You know what? Sometimes that's the best gift. You know, a new pair of shorts for a dad in his 30s. Perfect.
Exactly. I mean, it's functional. It's important. It's relevant in this specific way that the show ended yesterday. You know, friends have to look out for each other. And if I'm anything, and clearly I'm a good friend.
There you go. Josh Briscoe. He joins us every Friday at 11 o'clock here. He's our Chiefs contributor for 96.5 The Fan. You can check out his work over at ChiefsOnSI.com. He's the editor over there. Coming up in just a couple minutes, we will get to the trash of the day. But I want to get back to the Royals a little bit. We all know what's at stake today. They have a chance for the first time since 2015 to clinch a playoff spot. You can hear it right on this station, 96.5 The Fan, a little bit later on tonight. With a win or a Twins loss over the next 3 days. And that's why it'd be nice just to get out of the way tonight. They're taking on the Braves this evening. But you now don't have the same concern that you had a week ago or what we mostly had for much of the season.
Yeah, I would say for 95, 98, I don't care, whatever number you want to put at it, 95% of the season, I felt like the shoe was not going to drop on the chance for them to make the postseason. But when we got to the postseason, we knew what was going to end it. And when they got to the postseason, eventually, if they were going to lose a playoff game or lose a playoff series, we all knew it was going to be because of the bullpen. That's what we all thought this whole time. I've switched. I now think that if there is an Achilles heel for this team come playoff time, it is the lineup. It is the offense's ability to score. Over the last 2 weeks, 1 week, the bullpen has proven to me not that they're a strength. The strength is the starting pitching of this team. But they are no longer a liability in the way that they have been forever. They have narrowed down the field to the arms that they trust, and damn it, those arms work. Bubich, Lynch, Urseg, Schreiber, eventually it'll include Marsh and Singer. The bullpen works. It is no longer a crutch. It is not the thing that will unravel this team come playoff time. If there's a thing that stops them from winning playoff series, from getting out of the wild card round, from getting out of the ALDS round, it will be this team's inability to get four runs after their pitching staff just held them to three. It'll be their inability to get two runs after the pitching staff just held them all to one. I think that the offense is now a bigger liability in the playoffs than the bullpen.
Interesting. So I think I agree that the bullpen is on under less pressure once the playoffs start, because in a best of three series like they're going to have in a wild card round, you're starting pitching, you're depending on how they line it up, could be Reagans and Lugo in the first two games, or sure. Reagans and Waka, I should say, maybe in the first two games of the postseason. And so those are guys that are typically going to give you deeper outings, and so you may only need two innings of relief, perhaps, or three innings of relief, perhaps. So I think I agree with you that just naturally is going to shift come postseason. I think, unfortunately, though, there are still two concerns for how this thing goes down. I mean, it is going to either be the offense without Vinny having a night where they just don't hit, which we have seen plenty, or it still is going to be that outside of Versteeg, some of the other guys don't step up. I know you have more confidence, I think, than I do, that suddenly four of these guys have shown enough that we don't have to worry about them. I'm just not there. But I'll give you this. I think because of the way playoff baseball works and the way series are aligned and how starting pitching is even more valuable at that point in time, and the Royals have that as their strength, I think it takes some of the pressure off the bullpen. So by that logic, sure, I think I'm with you a little bit. But man, I think there's still the two. I think there's still big concerns. It was just going to be the bullpen, and now it's obviously going to be both.
And so, don't think it's, yeah, is it perfect? Is it the strength of the team? No, they're going to win behind their starting pitching just like they've won 100, just like they've won 84 or 85 times this year. The bullpen or the starting pitching is the reason they win.
Mm-hmm.
And look, the text line's asking, is like, hey, if Vinny comes back, then is the offense still a liability? And look, I'll be honest.
Yeah, I mean, if it's the ALDS or ALCS, we could have that conversation.
It's less of a liability. Sure. It's definitely less of a liability if Vinny's in the middle of the order. Now, I'll say, I think watching him hit off a pitching machine yesterday got people excited. Like,
oh, it did.
Vinny was going to be ready on Sunday. I do not think Vinny's going to be ready on Sunday.
Yeah.
Based on who I've spoken to or what I've heard, I'd still be stunned if Vinny was available for a wild card series.
Yeah.
I think the DS would be is he Wolverine? Pretty impressive effort. You got back by the ALDS? I mean, I can't believe it. ALCS seems way more realistic. And then if they were to get to the World Series, that actually fits the timeline about perfect. And so I can't count on that yet. And while I understand, I want to be able to just be like, Vinny's going to be in there, and I hope he's ready by any of those timelines, even on the ones that I would be surprised would seem way too early in the healing process, because it's a bone, not a joint. You know, like, he can't just play through a sore ankle. It was broken. It had to be surgically repaired. There's still a minimum of time before that is healed. But so less of, but it's just the bigger issue right now. If you make me power rank the confidence, starting pitching number one by the factor of a million, 10 out of 10, right? They got one of some of the best starting pitching in all of baseball, 10 out of 10 confidence level. What's my confidence level in the bullpen? 6 out of 10. Not a bad little unit they got there. They know who they're throwing in the highest leverage. They got guys they trust. They got guys getting outs. They got guys pitching well. Offense, 4. I mean, they got Bobby. They got Salvi. And then other than that, it's just like, hope it's someone's day today. Like, outside of that, I don't have confidence in the leadoff guy, the 4-hitter, 5-6. Sometimes they have their day, but I can't be sure any of those guys are going to put together a series. Not right now. Not based on what we've seen. Not based on the last month.
Yeah, I think if there was any more confidence in the bullpen, it's more about just playoff baseball, as I said, than how they've performed. It's that comments from Matt Quatrero saying this time of the year, you're more willing to give guy an outing on three straight days. You know, the way you approach playoff baseball versus a random game on June 10th, where you're not pitching Urseg three games in a row. I know he wasn't on the team then, but you get the point. You're not pitching any reliever 3 days in a row, typically in June, from a perspective of that, whereas now you are. You're willing to do it. We saw him do it. So that helps you with some of this too, to your point, a little bit about the bullpen. I think that's kind of how I would view it as well, but they're very, very close. Tonight could be the night we can actually stop saying if they make the playoffs and truly state it as a fact and actually start getting excited about a potential wild card series, either in Baltimore or in Houston. Cause those are the options.
It does stink that they're going to have to get to the wild card series by all accounts
to get a home game.
I don't think the Orioles have technically locked it up, but with a win tonight,
they'd have to lose out and the Royals would have to win out.
Yeah. So it's not technically locked up, but it's all but locked up, kind of similar to the Royals playoff spot, but it stinks that they're going to have to win their wild card series in order to get a game of the run. I hope it's against Baltimore, but also that requires on us counting on the White Sox to get wins against the Tigers tonight.
Trash of the day.
This takes us to Wisconsin. I don't know if they're a Badger fan or not, Drew, but this story involves an arrest on Tuesday with a woman who allegedly broke into a home and pretended to know the resident. So according to police, she was charged with burglary, criminal trespass, and they were alerted to an incident after the home's resident returned home. It's around 10:30 at night. Imagine this. You return home 10:30 and someone's in your house, right? Pretty scary situation.
Yeah, terrifying.
Right? She, of course, said she was startled to see all the lights on and she had been gone most of the day. Police arrived. They observed through a window another individual casually walking around the interior of the home. That was the lady named Joanna that they found out was actually breaking in. She was calmly advised to leave with them and not be allowed in the home. She provided a detailed story how she met the resident at a coffee shop earlier and been given keys to the house.
This is what she's claiming?
She had been in the house long enough to cook herself a shrimp and pasta dinner.
So what? Did she just like go through the fridge or freezer and be like, what do we got in here? Mm-hmm. Oh, a little shrimp and pasta? Because she's breaking into your house and she does not look like
she wasn't stealing anything other than the pasta, you know, but she wanted to.
But maybe she did. Did they say if she brought those ingredients herself?
She did not.
Oh, she got those out of the fridge.
She might have just then.
Dude, could you imagine? You think she brought pasta over to cook?
Little bag of groceries? Well, she's claiming she knew the people. Uh-huh. She's saying just, that they gave her
they
you
met
know,
earlier
access.
In the day.
I was going to say, she might have just assumed that they were nice Wisconsin people, you know, like they have been known to be.
Uh-huh.
Sure, they let me into their home. I don't know.
I do not. Like, it's weird enough, like, honestly, if I came home and someone was in my home, I would expect them to be, like, robbing me, right? Breaking in my house mm-hmm. to steal my stuff. I would be more confused by someone in there just, like, sautéing up a pan and be like, the hell's happening here?
Because
who
even
is
if
this
you
person
wanna,
and why are they cooking?
And they don't even run
I would ask my wife,
anything,
like,
just like,
hey, did you know someone was here cooking your food? Is this your friend?
Right, because even if it's true that they met earlier in the day, even if that part is true, if you had for the first time ever met someone that day, you're not just being like, hey, come on my house tonight. Cook whatever you want. I'll be back at 10:30. Like, I just don't believe it. I just don't buy that at all. Someone on text line says, I believe her. Even if you want to believe they met earlier in the day, I just don't know how you get to the part where 8 hours later, you're good with them in your house by themselves.
No. No. 0%.
That's freaky, man.
I let Kramer house it for me. I mean, that's risky
but
enough.
But you knew, you know?
I at least met Kramer.
Uh-huh.
You know,
did he leave anything
together.
Behind?
He left an ice cream sandwich and some body wash. Hmm. Said, do you want those things? He's like, no, just throw them away.
Did he clean your shower?
He didn't. No. Hmm. I don't think so. I don't think that's his job. I don't think he's supposed to clean the shower.
He's house sitting and he took showers in your house. I think you got to clean that shower up.
Spray the person,
do you have doors or do you have a walk-in? Like you have the sliding doors for
no,
your shower?
No, just like a tub shower okay. situation.
You just still wipe it down. A little scrub. Scrub on bubbles.
I don't think that's on you.
I don't know.
I don't think that's on you.
If I'm house sitting,
I clean it before he gets
there. You got to at least wipe it down, though. I mean, you take a shower in someone else's shower for a whole week.
To me, I don't know if it was Kramer's like responsibility days. Because Cody didn't have a problem with him sleeping in their bed.
Yeah.
At that point,
all bets
cleaning
off.
The shower, I don't know if that
that's
was a requirement.
Fair.
I cleaned the sheets before he got there. I put on fresh sheets.
Did he do laundry?
No, I cleaned them after he got back.
Yeah, nice
he doesn't
deal
even
for him.
Strip them.
Nice
this isn't an Airbnb.
It was a nice deal. I mean, I'm just saying courtesy.
And then I paid him money for, you know, taking care of my pets.
He got a great deal. He really did. That is the trash of the day. Up next, we get to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. One thing the Chiefs have not found consistency in recently. And I want to go back to something we asked Josh Briscoe about Mike Dana and where he's at with his performance. Next here on Cody and Gold.
This is Cody and Gold on your new home for K-State Athletics. 96.5, The Fan. Brought to you by Heartland Men's Health, the leader in men's sexual health. Thousands of men have been successfully treated for low T, ED. Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan.
Cody and Gold back here on 96.5 The Fan, and coming up in about 8 minutes, we will get to Mike Dana a little bit. We talked about him with Josh Briscoe, what we're seeing, and maybe a reason now. It makes sense where some of the production is. He didn't practice yesterday, so we'll do that in just a little bit. You guys can always interact with us on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. That's also the phone line to call into the show. And if you are calling into the show. You remember earlier in the week, we had a caller discuss the Buffalo Bills. We're going to talk about the three best teams in the AFC at the end of the Chiefs Right Half Hour, where the Chiefs are three-peating, but they're not going to get the four-peat, which is one of my favorite calls we've ever had on the show.
It's still just like, okay. Like, I can't even feel like, oh no!
The what Chiefs will always we do? Get the advantage. I'm going to tell you this right now.
Okay.
You guys win a three-peat, you're not winning the four.
That's right. That's right. 913-586-7.
He should have said something with his chest. You know, he didn't say with his chest.
9-1-6-5. In the meantime, let's talk about Andy Reid and this Chiefs offense. You and I think, agree a little bit on this, but also to different levels, to where I understand how a coach approaches fourth down situations by balancing the analytics with the feel. And you think, though, there's not enough consistency within that with Andy Reid. Because we go back 2 weeks. We know there was that fourth and one. They decided not to go for it from the one, and a fourth of three against Cincy they did. And that was brought up and brought a lot of attention to people. Those bug me more than the ones where you decide to punt at the 45-yard line or something. And you think those are all equal. I don't. You just want consistency.
Yes, that's what I want. Look, I've long since, or not long since, earlier this year, yeah, I was begging for him to make a change. What's bothered me more about it this year is not that he's not going for everyone I would go for. People can disagree. Travis Kelce on the New Heights podcast was asked about not going for it on one of these plays. And he was actually talking about at Sirianni struggling to be successful this year and it actively hurting the Eagles a couple of times this year. And Jason and him and Travis are going back. And Travis is like, I'm team go for it every time. And then, like, when Jason pushed back, not pushed back, but it was like, he's like, so would you have gone for that? He's like, look, this is why I don't call the plays all the time. Can't just be listening to Travis.
Is there any player that doesn't want to go for fourth down?
Yeah. This is why there's a little bit of, but what's bothered me about Andy's decision-making this year is no rhyme or reason. Fourth and one from the 40 is sometimes I go for it, sometimes I don't. Fourth and goal from the 2 is sometimes I go for it, sometimes I don't. I've got examples of both of those. When he's on plus side of the field, fourth and short, 2 or less, where sometimes he's gone for it and sometimes he hasn't. And it's not a time of game situation. It's just how Andy feels.
Yeah,
about
I don't
it.
Think it's cut as dry as you want to make it, though. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, but I just like I don't think do you want to operate that way. I do not think you should go for it 100% of the time. I do think that there is a balance in listen to what the numbers are telling you, but game situation should matter. And sometimes those things should have value. I actually think what's hurting him is Harrison Butker, fourth and goal or fourth and one from the 36-yard line and normal or, you know, 41-yard line. You're like, well, a 49-yarder, I can't be guaranteed that's 3 points. So sometimes you go for it because you're like, not a guaranteed three. But in Andy's eyes, and probably in fairness, Butker is a guaranteed three. And they're kind of getting stuck in no man's land where they're just going for it off vibes.
So I think having Butker definitely, you know, in your back pocket gives you some reassurance if you're Andy. Where I said, though, that I don't think it's cut and dry as you made it sound a little bit, I disagree. Like, you mentioned that there's certain circumstances where you notice that similar time of possession or whatever, time on the clock, and he punted from, let's say, the 40, and sometimes he hasn't. I don't think that is fair to say no rhyme or reason. I think from the outside to you and I, it might be that
it
way.
It just looks like he's just doing it for whatever reason.
And I've told you, that fourth and one was the one drove me crazy at the 1 yard line when they went for fourth and three. But to say in his point of view that there's no rhyme or reason, I think you know. I know it's not that simple because hey, what was the play sequence before? Is our defense playing well at that time? Just because in week 3 at the 42-yard line it's fourth and two and we go for it doesn't mean in week 17 at the 45-yard line on fourth and two we have to go for it. What is the score? Is it the first quarter or the fourth quarter? Is there a minute on the clock or is there 15 minutes on the clock?
Like he's doing
is
that,
my
like,
defense playing bad? Is my starting running back, is my left tackle out for the game? Is my offensive line holding up? Is my is Chris Jones hurt? Like, there are so many factors that go into each one. Doesn't mean I don't get frustrated because I don't get always the decision, but to act like there's no rhyme or reason, I don't think that's fair either.
But okay, so what you're describing is a rhyme and a reason, but just like Andy's gut, like how he feels about how the defense is playing.
It should be part of the equation.
But like here's the difference. he's like 80-20 vibes, gut, his instinct on where the game is going, and I want it to be 80-20 math. Like, there's the difference. And look, yeah. I understand. We vary on that very topic. Not you and me, me and Andy. Yeah. I would handle it different than Andy for that reason. And that's more than fair. That's probably where we're coming from. But what I'm telling you is his rhyme or reason is just how he's feeling. How I'm feeling in that moment. And he's taking in all the things you're talking about. He's factoring in what quarter it is, how he feels about the defense, if the wind's blowing for Harrison Butker, a million different things. If they just failed on two straight runs.
Yeah, I mean, on I the think goal it line. Matters.
And I'm not saying you should never factor in those things. You should. They should factor in. That's the mistake I think Sirianni makes, or a couple of years ago when we were talking. Well, we've talked about
Brandon
Mike
Staley
Daniel
with the Chargers initially only went off analytics, and it got him in. You know, then people criticized him, and then he didn't know what the hell to do, and he would turn out to be a disaster.
But I think just strictly going based on like how he feels like the game flow is in the second quarter is a mistake. The math would tell you the earlier you do it. Like I think he should be using more of his gut and instinct and game flow in the fourth quarter and stop using that logic in the second or third, because there is way too much time left to be getting points in this game to be knowing that, like, I feel like the defense is playing pretty good today. In the first quarter, you don't have any bearing on where that's going. Like, that could, you know, Spags in the second half. Like, there's so much unknown. In the fourth quarter, and he wants to go back to 80-20, I'll listen.
Yeah, I don't know what, the, I mean, I don't know what.
But also sometimes I just think you can put the game away there and sure. Just do it.
I don't know what the split is. I have no idea. I don't think we'll ever get that answer. I don't know if they have the exact answer with the yeah. breakdown of his just coach, you know, 35 years of coaching experience. By the way, that gut is different than
mine, sure.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. or mine or any, you know, a high school coach that's coached for 2 years. So let's not act like his gut vibe feeling is also like Joe Schmo off the street. I get frustrated a lot by it, but I just, you know, I don't think it's ever as simple as we make it out to be with like, well, he's just going for it for the hell of it. He has no reason. He's like, yeah, let me flip a coin in my back pocket. It's not that either.
No, I think it's a little more detailed than that. Look, but I also disagree. Like someone says, oh yeah, I'm going to listen to idiot talk show radio hosts instead of the coach. Not disagreeing with that, but the mistake fans make, I think hosts make sometimes, is pretending like Andy can also be wrong. Andy came into the season telling us Kadarius Toney was number one. He was wrong. That was a stupid thought. That was an idiot's decision.
That's an organizational evaluation.
Fine, yeah. But that was also a team evaluation. They didn't have to make him the number one wide receiver going into the season. That was an offense's decision, right? But that doesn't mean, is Andy right more than me? Yeah, I'm not an idiot. I'm not pretending like Andy doesn't know infinitely more about football than I do. But people who know as much about Andy's football or know close to it, like Kyle Shanahan seems to think they're going for it a lot more. So
yeah, he also doesn't know the overtime rules, but yeah,
no,
I got you.
But like, I'm just using the example of, it could have been any coach I use there. That one's a tough one because of the most recent overtime.
Sorry. A year ago, that wouldn't have been an issue for you.
Fine. But like when you're talking about, there are a lot of great coaches, Bill, it doesn't matter. There are other great coaches, other people who have surrounded themselves around football and this that have also do things differently. There's more than one way to do it. Doesn't mean Andy's way is wrong or right or just that way. I'm saying based on the way where their offense is, the talent they have on parts of the offense, the way the defense plays, I think Andy views it because like I saw on YouTube, right? We live stream the show. You can like and subscribe, please. You can watch us on video. He had said, hey, when you've got a great defense, team take the points. I'm the opposite. I think you can actually afford more risks with a great defense, and I think Andy views it different. And that's fine. Everybody takes those things separately. What I want is like a standardization of how you're approaching these. And I'll tell you, if you went through every fourth down decision so far this year, you would find a wild weirdness of things that don't look like they connect dots. And look, he's the fourth least aggressive on fourth down. The coach they're facing this week is the least aggressive. Some of that's just an old school mentality, and Andy's not going to change that tomorrow.
Well,
so
even beyond the analytics, though, like you can look at, okay, this is what the analytics say, but also not everybody who has the analytics has Patrick Mahomes. So I think you might even have better odds of converting a fourth and five from the 5 yard, a fourth and goal from the 5 yard line because you have, I know he's made mistakes, but you have Patrick Mahomes. So I think your chances beyond what just the analytics say are even higher because you can trust that the best quarterback in football is going to make the right decision, going to make the throw.
That also
and be able
it.
To live with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Having Patrick Mahomes makes me want to be more aggressive. It does. I'm like, he probably won't score.
Sure, but this goes back to where it's not the same circumstance. Right now, this Patrick Mahomes, the way he's currently playing, is not the same as 2018 week 5.
Yeah.
It's not. Doesn't mean he can't get back
now
to that.
In 2018 week 5, Andy was He's been running the same kind of setup. I don't think he was more. I'd have to look it up.
Patrick Mahomes had won an MVP that year. He's probably not winning it this year.
No, I'm saying.
I'm talking about from a. You guys were saying you have Mahomes, you approach it differently. I go, that also goes into on the other side. It's not just like you have Mahomes, you should go for everything. Hey, how is my quarterback playing right now? Is our offense clicking right now? The answer is it was clicking better in 2018, let's say, than it is in 2024. So my answer is different than what it might be now.
Sure. But I'm saying without looking at it, I would guess that Andy handled fourth downs exactly the same in 2018 as he does now.
Maybe so. But I'm just like, let's that's how they should view it. You know, I think these issues happen in every single city with every single coach and every single organization. I mean, hell, look at Thursday Night Football last night. We were watching Giants and Cowboys, and the way Brian Daboll approached it near the red, where they kicked five field goals, something like that in the game.
Five because he scored 15. Every single thing was a field goal.
Yeah, something like that. You know,
he had the ball at fourth and three from the three. Should he have gone for the touchdown to open the second half?
Yeah.
If they wanted to beat the Cowboys, you could say you absolutely have to go for a touchdown. You're not going to beat the Cowboys by kicking field goals.
But the Chiefs don't have to. The point Alex is making, which I think where Andy gets stuck is, and where Andy decides, is like he's not worried about that. He knows he can kick a field goal and still win a football game. Andy wins football games at a higher rate than any coach in the league. He's the best coach in the league. I don't think that's even arguable, but it doesn't, like, the same reason he says those things is the same reason I actually think are true. It also doesn't mean he's infallible and everything he does is right. And so, like, this feels like one of those areas in which he can make a small improvement by just, I think, tightening up the plan rather than taking every, like, have a, and I'm sure he would tell me he does, but it feels like in the first three
that's
games,
the only thing my biggest, like,
I'm sure
everything else is fair game. My biggest issue is like, I don't think
I'm trying to get in Andy's head.
I don't think it's fair to say like, oh, he's just doing it for the hell of it. That
it
is definitely not, it's definitely not how,
it, sure.
you know, his decision making is actually going. But this will be something I'm sure that comes up later in the year because it comes up every single year. And as I said, I think in every single city with every single team, there's always people that are going to view a certain situation differently on fourth downs, on, you know, where you are on the field. And I think more than ever, there's a mindset of go for it all the time anyway. I mean, I think that's just the for a lot of fans based off of change in the game and where things are at. All right, let's talk about Mike Dana for a little bit, though, because earlier in the week we brought up, hey, his, you know, pass rush win rate is down. It's 4%. Last 3 years, it was around 8.7, and typically you want to at least be at 10%. If you're, you know, elite, you're above 20%. And so 4% is concerning. I think we might have found out why the numbers are down. We asked Briscoe about this too earlier this hour, but he did not practice yesterday, Mike Dana. He had a quad injury last week. He did not practice yesterday. We'll see what happens today on a Friday. That would explain a little bit of this, right? I mean, why, for a guy that was, you know, production-wise, percentage-wise, double better in win rate than he is now. Maybe it has to do with some of the other personnel. But if you're hurt, you're hurt, and it makes your job a little more challenging to the point where if he didn't practice yesterday, you know what? You're playing the Chargers. We've gone through this on the flip side of talking about Herbert and everything. Same thing applies here. Now it puts more pressure on Felix, for example. But if he's not right, this is one of those games where I know it's division, but
take a day.
Let Dana get ready if it means you're going to see an increase in his production, because right now it hasn't been great.
So normally I would say that this would be a concerning sign for a player who just got a contract, obviously. They didn't just give him a one-year deal. They gave him a three-year deal. He'd be $8.5 million in dead cap next year. Look, they got an out. Essentially, they gave him a two-year deal with a third-year option in their end. But Dana, to me, is one of those players at 27 years old. What, I think he just fell off? No, I think Dana has proven to me that he is a league average, maybe slightly below, but a league average pass rusher who will do the job well enough that he's just like the grinder. He's not going to jump off the page. He's not going to wow you every single snap. But will he get the job done 70% of the time? Yeah. Yeah, he probably will. So do I just chalk this up to injury? Yes. I also think that what's taught me this year is we should be factoring in the injuries at the beginning of the season for how people play. Nick Bolton was playing worse because he was coming in injured. Justin Reed is playing worse because he came in with no camp, with an injury. Do I think Dana should be a part of that conversation? Yes, I do. I think that could probably be chalked up to that. They've been mediocre, the pass rush. They've been pretty good. Not top 10, probably, but they're not Chiefs aren't a bad pass rush team either. so I can live my life for the next few weeks while Dana gets healthy. But I'm with you. I'd probably take a week off.
We'll find out from Andy, 1 o'clock hour today. You'll hear him get a final injury report status. But on a Thursday, if you didn't practice at all and you were limited, kind of gives you a little bit of an insight of where things maybe are trending for Mike Dana in this game on Sunday afternoon out in L.A.
Yeah, probably. But, I mean, Dana's proven, like, we go back to this with, like, Andy or anything else. Hasn't Dana proven to just be, like, a pretty good player? Again, not jumping off the page or anything, Gold, but don't you mostly think of Dana as, like, a pretty good NFL player? I know he's only had, like, but he had 3 sacks 3 years ago, 5 sacks 2 years ago, 6.5 sacks last year. His snaps have increased every year, so he's technically gotten a little bit better each year. I just view him as a guy you can put on the outside opposite George Karlaftis, just as long as Chris Jones is doing his job. And now that Turk Wharton is handling some interior duties pretty effectively, well, then I need Dana even a little bit less, hypothetically, in that scenario. They're still not a great pass rush team. They haven't been for years. They have one elite pass rusher, one pretty good pass rusher in George Karlaftis, and then just some dudes.
So if Dana can't go, I'd be a little excited in year two, now week 4 of the season, to see what Felix could do if he was given a bunch of snaps. Obviously, they have not been rotating him in as much. We've discussed the struggles with him and the development. He got a free rush on Kirk Cousins and was able to come up with the big play, which is still progress. But I'd be interested to see if Dana can't go, how many of those snaps go to Felix, or do they go a different direction? They don't have many other directions to go. And could Felix actually do something against 2 backup tackles that are in that game? So to me, there's a little intrigue there if in fact this happens.
What do you view? So I got asked over on YouTube, because it's fair, because we're talking about Dan and these others. How do you view George Karlaftis if you thought Chris Jones wasn't there with him?
Well, that was the big dilemma this offseason.
But now we know. Yeah. So, like, now he's still here, so now we're just taking a guess. What do you think George Karlaftis ranks in the NFL? League average? Above league average? Well better than league average? Where is George Karlaftis without Chris Jones?
Yeah, based off of what we see with him, everybody's going to automatically assume you got to knock off X amount of sacks or whatever. I don't know what the sack number would be. I would say he would be probably viewed as an average, slightly above average pass rusher. Whereas with Chris Jones, he's clearly an above average pass rusher. That's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, I think he's like,
I don't think he's going from 10.5 to a 5 sack guy, but I also, even with Chris Jones, we were talking about his elevating his game this year and what's the number he can get to and things like that. I don't think he's a 14 sack guy. I don't believe that is who he is, which is fine.
I think he's slightly
like those are very few guys can be that.
Yeah.
But with Chris Jones, his job obviously is easier. They both help each other out. But Karlaftis would probably be viewed more as an average, slightly above average guy without Chris Jones.
I think it's, slightly above average. That's how I would probably rank him, which is fine if you've got any elite pass rusher to go with it. George Karlaftis doesn't have to be Max Crosby, just as long as Chris Jones is still on this team. So I guess I don't over panic, at least on that possibility, because I still think it's there. But yeah, I chuck up some of the poor play to injuries. It's why I'd be forgiving of Justin Reed and forgiving of Nick Bolton over the next few weeks while they get their sea legs underneath them as 2 guys who missed all of camp and had injuries going into it. That doesn't seem unreasonable to me. The same reason you and I thought Travis Kelce's production was down in the early part of the season last year. Now, that does not apply to this season's production of Travis Kelce, but still. Can I bet, I haven't looked yet, can I bet on the Chiefs' first play that I think it's a pass to Travis Kelce?
I don't think you can
You can't do pass to Kelce, I don't think.
You can do completed pass, incomplete pass, run for 1 yard.
Specifically,
I don't think you can do
pass
individual.
To Travis Kelce, and I want them to give me like 10-1 or something, you know, whatever.
Yeah, there's way too many variables. They're not going to offer that. But it can, like Drew said, it can be a completion, it can be a pass, it can be on the first drive, does Travis get a touchdown? It can be on the first drive or the first quarter over under 15.5 receiving yards. It can be stuff like that.
You can do catches on a drive. On FanDuel, for instance, you can say player to catch a pass on a specific drive, and it can have the odds for those players.
We do our best bets thing over on the 96.5 The Fan social media page. I'm just telling you right now, I have once again put more of my hard-earned money. I am going to either go broke or break even this week. I am dying on the hill that Travis Kelce's receiving yardage total is too low. Wasn't too low last week, it turns out. He hit the under. I refuse to believe that this number has gotten so comically low that he won't hit it again this week.
I mean, one of the weeks is
going
to happen.
I'm going down swinging.
One of the weeks is going to happen.
I'll give up after this week. I'm either breaking even or I'm
the guys on destitute. Fesco Dusty asked me yesterday when I was in for a betting segment and Bob was asking about betting on Kelce, and I said, he's going to hit over eventually, but I'm off it until I see one week where he hits it. Otherwise, you're totally chasing. So this will probably be the week that he does it, but I'm not on it this week. I want to see a week where he hits the number, and then we can kind of reset things and go from there.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair, but I'm not me. I'm I've been losing money on it, and I'm chasing losses. I think they tell you not to do that in sports. Wait, oh, let's all pretend nobody ever does that.
Of course.
Alex Gold's never chased a loss. He's above
never.
It. He's too good.
That's right, yeah.
But come on. I'll just tell you right now, this is the loss I'm chasing. I typically don't do that, but I'm chasing this damn loss to the bitter damn end.
Also, by the way, we were talking about Mike Dana, a couple tweets from some media at the brief media look that's out there. Mike Dana, back at practice. So much for that conversation. We'll see what his availability is, but it doesn't mean he could still be limited today. But we were talking about Mike Dana. That's obviously a good sign.
Yeah, I like that he's back in practice. But again, this is like the Justin Herbert thing. This doesn't feel like the week to risk it. Mm-hmm. But the Chiefs do know this. This is the one thing they have in their back pocket, just like the Chargers do with Justin Herbert and the ankle. They both have bye weeks coming up. So if you can risk the injury, they're going to get they're going to get a full week off coming up in like 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. Chiefs get a full week off. So does Justin Herbert, like in a week. So maybe that's something they're considering.
Up next, we'll get to what's trending, and then right back into the Royals, who have a chance to clinch a playoff spot for the first time since 2015 tonight, right here on 96.5 The Fan.